Committee on Ways and Means for Monday, April 18th, 2005. I will open a hearing on health-related occupational licensing boards, HB 5036, and opening a hearing on 5037, health-related occupational licensing boards, fee bill. We were going to do a presentation this morning, but that probably will not be to next week. The co-chairs notified us a little bit ago, not today, but and then Representative Jensen and I met with them, that there is a proposal potentially under consideration for some of the smaller licensing boards to consolidate their administrative support. It is merely at this stage only a proposal. They have asked us to look into this. We will have a more detailed presentation on it next week, hopefully. But it is not in any sense something that is we've made any decision about. It all comes about as part of the Joint Audits Committee from the last interim was looking at small health-related licensing boards and looking at the potential of merging some of their administrative support. Ms. Manthe had also went from that and looked at this issue, and the co-chairs have been looking at this issue, and they basically asked us to examine it so that there is nothing actually being decided today about this, but it will be something that will be before us. So I just wanted to make sure that the committee was aware of that. With that, our first group that's here is the Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Douglas Van Fleet, the Executive Secretary of the Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians. The board was created by the 1989 legislature as a voluntary licensing agency to which dietitians could apply for membership for license if they, in effect, promised to not misuse the term licensed dietitians, dietitian, or the letters LD. Interestingly, one of our licensees has found the letters LD being used by a licensed denturist. The denturist statute says nothing about using the letters LD, and it doesn't, therefore, represent a disciplinary matter for the Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians. There are approximately 400 licensees. They pay a biennial license fee of $150 and agree to uphold the integrity of the state statute that created the board. Originally, the board had difficulty remaining financially sound, but after an increase of the original fee, a shift to a biennial license, and a change of the renewal date so that the board did not run out of money before the renewed license fees became available, fiscal soundness has been attained. We have three performance measures that are best shown on page B24. The first of those measures has to do with the promptness with which applications are processed. And I promised the legislature 2 years ago that we would have all of our dietitian licenses for license and for renewal processed within 2 weeks. As a matter of fact, the percentage processed within 2 weeks was 71. And that's going to come up. It's higher now. It's up toward the 100s. It's 98 at the moment. And I have tapped the energy and expertise of my colleagues in the other state, some of the other state licensing boards, to learn the secret of a more rapid response. Namely, let the papers pile up, but get the licenses out. So I will do my filing later and hope to attain 100%. The second performance measure is the percentage of complaints determined to be unfounded or resulting in final order within 9 months. We have a goal of 100%. In fact, we don't have any discipline that falls within the need of formal disciplinary procedure, so it's been relatively easy to reach the promised goal of 100%. The third performance measure is the percentage of licensees rating the agency service as at least good. We promised 50%. We've gotten 77. More lately than this figure was available, the percentage has been 89. So I don't expect to have any trouble performing what's expected by the licensees by way of satisfactory service. The licensing board keeps in touch with its licensees by means of regular board meetings, newsletters to licensees that are also posted on our website, public service radio announcements, which are meant to address concerns of the licensees as they hear or read in alternative media, statements that seem perhaps suspect when it comes to good nutrition and dietitian practice. We have one staff person, 0.3 FTE, 400 licensees, 7 board members, and a governor's recommended budget of a little less than $70,000. Part of the work of the board is done by the members, who as volunteers are principally responsible for the newsletter, and we also have interagency agreements with the Department of Human Services for accounting, with the nursing board for networking, with companion boards that share the cost of fax and copier, and the sharing is done on the basis of agency FTE. We rent our space from the Department of Administrative Services, our phones, some of our printing and web maintenance, and we have a private contractor shared with other licensing agencies for database management.
Any questions? Hearing none. Thank you. Are you finished with your presentation?
Yes, except I want to make sure you have a copy of what I call my Gordley document that shows the ethnic origin, yes, and the ability of our licensees to communicate at work in languages other than English.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Senator Gordley, it's not as common as McCain-Feingold, but Gordley.
That means the work is being internalized, Mr. Chair. I'll go with that. Thank you very much for pointing it out.
You're welcome.
Please, Mr. Gores, proceed.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jim Gores. I'm with the Department of Administrative Services Budget Management Division. What I'll be working off today is the PowerPoint presentation you have in front of you. And then I'll just go real quickly. It's just intended to give you a high overview of how this agency sets up and what some of the issues are.
Members, it's tucked inside your binder.
Thank you. On page 2, this just shows the Consumer and Business Services Program area by agency. The little health-related licensing boards that some of which you're going to be hearing today are tucked into what's called the health-related licensing boards. Of the consumer business services area, they comprise 0.9% of the all funds budget there. And then to help you get a better sense of how dietitians stack out amongst those 9 boards, dietitians also has 0.9% of the budget within the health-related licensing board agency there. On page 3, this agency fell under the governor's principal budget under the health and basic needs category. On page 4, this agency is all other funds, 100% other funds. Their budget is governor's recommended budget is $69,122, and all their revenue sources come from license fees. Their general program is 100%. And then on page 6, personal services is 44% of their budget. Services and supplies comprises 56% of their budget. And then on page 7, this kind of gives you a little bit of the history of their budget. Just kind of see that they've remained with one position and 0.3 FTE for the last three biennium. And just you can see the increase in their budget there a little bit as it goes. And then on the last page, page 8, they have no major policy issues. And the board has one policy package, which requests limitation to move their accounting functions from the Department of Human Services to shared client services within the Department of Administrative Services. And I'll answer any questions.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a package that you're going to see in every one of the boards that are going to come before you in this budget bill, which is to move the services, as Mr. Gorse just said, from Department of Human Services, who is currently providing them their accounting and budgeting and HR services. They want to switch that to the Department of Administrative Services. And so you'll see a package come forward in each one of these boards, and it occurs to me now in hindsight that I probably should have and will prepare for you a summary so you can see it all together, and I'll get that out to you this afternoon.
Could I ask,
yes.
Mr. Chair, why all these boards are wanting to do that? You can answer, or you can answer.
I'll be happy to. Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, the purpose is that early on, when these boards were formed, they needed some kind of way to do their accounting functions in an efficient manner. And they were originally under the Department of Human Services. They were at that time they were broken out. And but the DHS or Department of Human Services was required to then perform the accounting functions. Just due to the nature of DHS, they're not set up to handle that as much. They've got to worry about running DHS. It's running small boards is just not within their purview. However, we have what's called shared client services in the Department of Administrative Services, which is set up specifically to help these smaller agencies in the state. And so they're simply wishing to shift over there and receive the accounting functions, et cetera, there.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions? Hearing none, thank you very much. The next group before us is the Board of Examiners of Nursing Home Administrators.
Good morning, Chair Devlin and members of the committee. My name is Janet Bartel. I am the executive officer of the Oregon Board of Examiners of Nursing Home Administrators. Today with me is our board chair, Misty Wittenberg, and she is also one of our licensees. I'll begin with some background on the board. The Board of Nursing Home Administrators was created in 1971. However, the state of Oregon has licensed nursing home administrators since 1956. The board is supported solely by other funds generated through fees for examination and licensure. The board's mission is to protect the public by developing, imposing, and enforcing standards that shall be met by individuals in order to receive and retain a license as a nursing home administrator. The board is comprised of 9 members, and we meet quarterly. The board employs 1 full-time employee, which is myself, and I provide executive and administrative support to the board. The board, like with the dietitian's board, the board shares a suite with 6 other health-related licensing boards. We share office equipment, information system support, dedicated conference room for meetings, and additionally, The board recently established a network connection with the Department of Human Services in order to share information and reduce duplicated efforts. Our major budgetary issues that the board is facing would be, first and foremost, the continuing decline of individuals seeking positions as nursing home administrators, the continuing decline of exam candidates particularly. While this does not pose an immediate issue for Oregon, except in some rural areas, the future of the profession is in question. We need to have the availability of competent and qualified administrators, given the fact that Oregon's economic and demographic trends project that the fastest growth in the population over the next 20 years will be our old seniors and young seniors. We need to have people available to care for these people. Given this, the board has introduced a policy package requesting additional funds and totaling $1,500 to allow for one representative to attend an additional meeting at a national level to address these concerns. This is not specific to Oregon. This is nationwide. And we need to start in a proactive sense to look at the best way to deal with this forthcoming problem. An additional policy package that the board has presented focuses on a $1,500 increase to the Attorney General Object Code. And this is coupled with a 16% inflationary factor. Conversely, the Attorney General's hourly rate will increase by more than 21% in the forthcoming biennium. Given this, the board, in essence, will have less money to work with because the increase is disproportionate to what is actually being increased on the Attorney General's side. If we're given a 16% inflationary factor and they're introducing a 21% inflationary factor, we're really falling behind on what is our core and obligation to the citizens of Oregon. The resulting lack of any competent legal services could impact complaint, investigation, and compliance activities and restrict the board's efforts to protect the residents of nursing home facilities. The board currently has 175 active licensees. Active licensees are defined as those licensees who are working in the field as nursing home administrators or who expect to be working in the field for more than 6 months during a license period. We have 210 inactive licensees. Inactive licensees are defined as individuals who are not currently employed in the field. They may be working, for instance, in assisted living facilities or in some other capacity within the nursing facility. The board is proposing modifications to all six of its performance measures. I am a recent employee of the board. I came to the board in November 2003. I had very little experience with performance measures, but I dove into it because I saw the benefit of performance measures and felt that in order for a performance measure to really work, it has to correctly identify and evaluate what you're measuring and the outcome. In looking at the board's performance measures, we were able to identify that there needed to be some changes in order to focus more clearly on the board's mission and its outcome and to basically identify and demonstrate any progress that the board is making with its performance measures. To begin with, the board looked at the target that is established for our first performance measure of customer service satisfaction. There's an unusually high target at 100%, and I think we can all agree that this is a fairly impossible goal. You really can't please 100% of the people 100% of the time. And over time, it would prove discouraging to try to meet the target that is just unattainable. I think it's more realistic, and I think the board agrees with this, that 95% is a very high goal to achieve. And if you can achieve that with consistency, you're doing a very good job. So the board is proposing to change simply the target for the customer service measure. There are two performance measures relating to our training program, which consists of a number of components. There's the trainee who is established to be qualified for the program by virtue of education and sometimes background as well. And then there's the preceptor who is the mentor or the person who volunteers their time and effort to train this person for a minimum of 6 months or more. The two existing measures focused on the performance and rating of the preceptor, who is the volunteer component in this, and did not focus on the AIT program. The board looked at this as being sort of punitive in nature in an industry fraught with regulation and felt that it would be best to focus on the program and identify any needs for improvement in the program rather than to solely focus on one component who is volunteering their time and effort. A punitive measure like this may ultimately impact the training program by reducing the number of available preceptors. We can't afford not to have people there to train these people. And if they think that we're going to be watching them and we're going to be punishing them in some way, they're not going to be willing to step forward and be a part of this program. And we need to foster that. We need to foster those people being available, wanting to participate, and increasing those opportunities for our AITs, our trainees. So, given that, the board proposed several changes, modifications, to the two measures focusing on the preceptor. We proposed that it would be better to focus on the AIT program overall rather than just the preceptor. In addition, the board decided that it would be better to look at replacing one existing measure rating the performance of this individual with a measure identifying those AITs who have completed voluntarily more than the minimum required number of hours. The result of that would be that in the future you can look back at those people perhaps with a follow-up survey asking them, you know, what has been your level of satisfaction with your AIT program. If you see consistently that people with more hours in their AIT program are more satisfied and are doing their job better, perhaps then the AIT program would need to increase its hours to adequately serve the needs of the trainees. The next measure that the board was looking at modifying related to performance measure number 4 relates to Oregon trained administrators receiving a substandard survey letter. We're basically looking at the percentages of these Oregon trained administrators who receive a substandard survey letter, which is pretty much a letter that indicates that they're not achieving a level of expectation. The board really needs to look at all administrators in this area, and it shouldn't be solely confined to Oregon-trained administrators. If you want to have a comparative, if you want to have comparative information, you need to have the other side of it. You need to have, you know, the out-of-state trained administrators versus the Oregon-trained administrators for comparison purposes. It's hard to compare something to see, are we doing it well? Are we doing it good enough? If you don't have anything to compare it to. So the board is proposing to change the language of this measure to include all administrators for comparative purposes. Performance measure number 5 focuses on the length of complaints, which is largely indeterminate. The majority of complaints that this board receives fall outside of the board's jurisdiction because they're direct care related, which is something that the administrator usually is not involved in. They're referred to the responsible agencies rather than moving on to investigation in most cases. Given this, the board proposes to modify the language of the measure to more accurately reflect its complaint and investigation practices and to adjust the target accordingly. The board actually reviews many complaints that that fall within its purview and elects to resolve the issue through mediation or settlement. It's rare that the board actually proceeds to disciplinary action in these cases, to formal disciplinary action. And usually the board is able to address the issue within 90 days, and that is simply because the board meets on a quarterly basis. So the board is proposing to modify that target, to lessen that target from 120 days to 90 days. Performance measure number 6 is also the language of the measure severely restricts the collection of data for the board. The existing measure focuses on the rule review process, which only occurs every 3 years. It doesn't make sense to just look at responses to administrative rule changes and comments only every 3 years. That means that we have 2 years with no data. We might as well look at all of our administrative rule changes. We might as well look at all comments received rather than just focusing on this one process. So the board is proposing to change this measure to include all administrative rules and not focus on that one rule review process. In addition, and finally, the board is proposing to add a measure for rating the percentage or determining the percentage of administrators who voluntarily complete more continuing education than they are required to complete. Continuing education is important to administrators. It allows them to perform their duties and their job with competency, skill, and ethics. Let's see. With regard to Senate Bill 786, excuse me, the board has began to collect the necessary data for ethnicity and bilingual skills. Unfortunately, I did not realize that you wouldn't want a graph, but I will be happy to provide one. I will go back to the office and prepare one for you and forward it if you would like. And I will also entitle it the Gordley paper.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
That's not necessary. I do appreciate that this is an area that you are obviously giving attention to, and will appreciate receiving the report directed to the entire committee.
Okay.
And again, thank you very much for your efforts.
I'm sorry I didn't bring it. But we are working on that. We have recently had an AIT successfully complete our program, and he was a practicing physician in Nigeria. The board was very happy to see him go through this program, and it was very supportive of his needs. I also, each year, participate in our preceptor training workshop, and at that time, I have the opportunity to encourage preceptors to look at candidates of ethnicity and to try to, you know, draw them into the profession if they have the opportunity. Let's see. We are also in the bill, the Shared Client Services Bill 2058, which was previously mentioned. We are a part of that bill as well. I will be performing the cashiering duties in-house to offset some of the costs of transitioning to this program, or to this service provider. I guess my only comment in defense of this particular bill is that coming into this agency in November 2003, I struggled in developing this budget with accounting reports and historical information that was well below the standards of expectation. I had to go back and pretty much recreate the history of the board, revenue-wise and otherwise, and in doing so found numerous errors, incredible errors that I just could not believe could occur without notice. So I really think that, you know, the problem is that the Department of Human Services lacks the staff needed to serve the unique needs of these boards. We really need a dedicated provider who is willing to provide the services that we need and recognize each of our unique needs. So I'm hoping that that this bill will pull through the legislature intact. Thank you for your time. I would be happy to answer any questions or provide any information.
Any questions from Ms. Bartel?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Again, thank you very much for your presentation and for your attention to detail. It is very troubling to hear that the number of administrators is decreasing. And I'm wanting you to share with us your thoughts about what you need from this legislature. How can we be of assistance to you in promoting the need, talking about the shortage? I mean, this is a huge, huge need and issue, and as you pointed out, what's happening in Oregon is part of a national downturn, and it really requires our attention more than we've given.
Oh, yes. I think it's much better to take a proactive rather than reactive stand. You don't wait until the train hits the wall. You stop it first. You stop it before it gets to that point. And I think that the board recognizes, you know, that we need to step up to the plate. And even though it's not the board's responsibility to ensure that there is adequate number of administrators for the industry's purposes, but it really is our responsibility to ensure that there are qualified and competent people out there to care for the most needy segment of our society. To be honest, I think a lot of the issues that administrators are facing may make the prospect of entering the profession a little daunting. People coming out of college who are really very young still, I think, are not looking toward the profession as much, possibly because of the regulation, the poor press, bad press. The growth of the assisted living facility area providing opportunities with far less training. You can be an administrator of an assisted living facility with as few as 40 hours of training. And we require 960 hours of training and a bachelor's degree, which it's not required for assisted living. So there are opportunities in other areas that may seem more appealing to these people. In addition, I think, you know, you look at a pay in overall in the healthcare industry that's disproportionate with, you know, the actual job that they're doing. They're working very hard. So what you're left with is a pool of candidates who have an ambition, a desire to serve for the greater good of the community. And those are the people that you need to continue to attract, because they're the best candidates. They're not there for the money. They're not there for recognition. They're there for their satisfaction, their self-motivation, for their desire to serve. And to be honest, I can't tell you personally what would be, you know, the best direction for the legislature to take. And maybe Misty Wittenberg, the board chair, can provide you with the benefit of her experience as a nursing home administrator and the barriers and successes that perhaps she perceives. So if you're willing.
Ms. Wittenberg, would you want to comment?
I would say, Mr. Chair, that would be very helpful, and I would draw our attention. I've lost the page, but there is a page that shows the number of licensees per county, which draws a very stark picture of what you're talking about. So, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Gorley. I appreciate the opportunity to give you an answer on this.
Please identify yourself.
Forgive me, Misty Wittenberg, and have been a licensed nursing home administrator for about 12 years now, I believe. One of the aspects I think that does stand out is that in the nursing home industry or profession, we like to call it, we, I believe, have surpassed nuclear energy in regulation. There are so many things, and I don't mean that jokingly, there are so many things that we have to adhere to with regulation. It is a daunting task, as it has been said. When agency comes in and does a survey of the nursing facilities, which is absolutely necessary, and I think has made the nursing home industry a much more favorable place and has helped in a lot of ways, so I'm supportive of it. But I would like to see, and have for 12 years tried to work on this, is making it a more consultative approach, that when the surveyors come in, it is not a pointing of the finger and putting an administrator down or the staff down and looking to find something wrong. It's more, we've noticed this is something you can improve on. Let me give you some suggestions how you can do that. It has been a definite trend that suggestions are not necessarily given. And that's something that I would love to see change. I think that would make it a much more welcome area for administrators to be working within, and also because surveyors and administrators and their staff, we're all on the same path. We all want the best care for our residents and an excellent working environment for our staff. But we need to work together in order to do that. So that would be my number one suggestion.
That's very helpful.
Good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you for your contribution.
My pleasure.
My pleasure.
Yes. Senator Nelson.
Yeah, I appreciate the comments, and thank you for coming. And this is a very difficult area. I was looking at page 11 of your narrative, and the reasons for decline, you're talking about a punitive regulatory environment, compensation disproportionate, long hours, staffing shortages, growth of the assisted living industry, funding shortages. You have a big job, the answer is, you're dealing with such a emotional spectrum of care. How much money do you think? If you were you had your wishes, how much money would it take actually to solve all those problems?
Oh. it's not just about money.
It's not money.
Senator Nelson, Jeanette Bartel, it's not just about money. No. It really isn't. I think that society has to change its view of these citizens and has to recognize their needs. They've given to us, and now it's time for us to give back, I think.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative March.
Thank you. Well, with regard to the punitive nature, I noticed that there have been no civil penalties or fines levied in 1901, 01, 03, or to date this time. So from that standpoint, that argument kind of is a little diminished in my mind. But the question I had is, your board, as other boards, are paid, is that per meeting? I see you have 9 members. And how much are they paid per meeting?
Standard per diem, which is $30.
$30. Okay. And I note that we're paying Social Security on that. So one question I would have of DAS and LFO is there a way in which we could restructure that payment as a stipend in lieu of expenses, et cetera, where it would not generate Social Security and that would cut down a little bit on bookkeeping and some other fees?
Representative March, I'm actually surprised since that I think it's identified as an expense or stipend. I'm a little bit surprised being paying Social Security on it.
Well, I noticed this one and the previous board both list Social Security at 7.65% of the salary.
They may be referring to my salary.
Nope.
They're not. They're referring to the board members.
Yep. So
okay.
Either there's
for bookkeeping
either
purposes.
This report is wrong, or there's an accounting issue, or what? But we need to track that down.
Right, Representative March. for bookkeeping purposes. We do not handle that part of it in the office. That's handled by the Department of Human Services. That's part of the services that they provide to us.
It could be just a projection.
Yeah. With regard to your comment on regulation or the punitive side of the industry, the board elects primarily to try to resolve issues through mediation and settlement that doesn't result in formal disciplinary action that may not necessarily be represented clearly. I think the punitive side that we're talking about is with another agency, lies in other agencies rather than with the board. And I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Hearing none, we'll go on to Mr. Gore's presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, Jim Gore's Department of Administrative Services. I think it's probably in your packet. Let's go through it really briefly. Point 9% of the Consumer Business Services Program area is the health-related licensing boards, of which the Nursing Home Administrators is one of them. Of those boards, their budget comprises 2.8% of that whole group. They fell under the governor's principal budget under the health and basic needs category. Their entire budget is other funds, of which the governor's recommended budget is $204,047, and all that comes from license fees. Their personal services is 63% of their budget. Services and supplies is 37%. And on page 7, once again, this is kind of the history of their budget. They have not increase their FTE or positions in the last three biennia. And then finally on page 8, major policy issues as we just discussed, declining licensee base. And then finally they have three policy packages. One, as previously discussed, moving their accounting functions from the Department of Human Services to Shared Client Services. Another one to increase Attorney General limitation. And then also to allow for board representation at the annual National Association of Board of Examiners as long-term care administrator meetings. And that's all, unless you have questions.
Any questions? Uh-huh. Representative March and Representative Wisnett.
You didn't touch on this particularly, but we note that in 2005-07 we're projecting $3,700 of interest income. Currently, my presumption is that money is not just sitting in a non-interest-bearing account. So by shifting this interest to this board, does the general fund thus suffer?
Yes. Simply put, yes.
Okay. If we're adding up all of the, if we're shoving interest over to all of these boards and commissions, et cetera, are we severely in cumulative effect, have a fairly negative effect on the general fund?
Mr. Chair and Representative Marsh, I don't have the exact figures in front of me. I should, but I wasn't anticipating asking that.
It's little flags.
Yeah, no. And that is a very good question. It does impact the general fund. The argument could be made, too, that these are licensees' fees, and therefore the interest that's earned off those should be returned to the licensees that pay the fees that their interest is earned on. It's between $100,000 and $200,000 total is the impact on the general fund, somewhere in there. So it's not substantial. In my world, that's a lot of money, but in the general fund world, it's not a lot of money.
Clarification, Representative Marchand. Since these are actual board funds, which are not generated by any general fund purpose, wouldn't the earnings from those funds normally, or shouldn't they have been credited to the board?
Mr. Chair, they are credited to the board. However, they're put in, I think it's called a public... health account or something like that under DHS, and it's actually the interest goes to the general fund that is earned on that account.
And that complies with generally accepted accounting principles?
I could not tell you, sir.
Representative Marsh, did you have...
Well, if we're going to go down who owns the money and who pays for what, I note that probably DAS has some fees in here, but there is no fee for the time the legislature spends reviewing these budgets. And so, you know, it's there could be a quid pro quo there. Thank you.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gores, I toured the building, I think, that this agency and the other ones are in Portland, Northeast Portland, last week. And they're being charged, and all the boards are being charged for the common area fee. There's a lot of wasted space in that building that's not being used now because the cafeteria is closed. I understand that, and also the nursery's closed. I understand the Board of Nursing is going to occupy or is going to gain, but are you looking at these little agencies and adjusting your CAM charges for them in that building? Because there's a lot of wasted space in that building.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, since I work for budget management, I can't answer that directly. However, I have been involved in that more than I would like to be. I can certainly representative from the DAS facilities has offered to meet with anybody on this board regarding that move and regarding the Portland State Office Building management, and I'd be happy to ask them to meet with you and explain their thinking and their management on that.
I will decline. Thank you for your kind offer. I don't want to go there, but I think it's something that hopefully you are looking at and not charging the boards unreasonably, because and I think someone in the facilities business in DAS needs to look at that building and see how we can better utilize that building.
I'll pass that along.
Thank you.
Anything additional? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next board before us is the Board of Naturopathic Examiners. Ms. Walsh.
Did you go to take
one? No, I didn't make it.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Devlin and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ann Walsh. I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Naturopathic Examiners. The board was established in 1927 to protect and regulate naturopathic physicians in Oregon. In June of 2004, the board rewrote their mission to be more inclusive. As the profession has grown, so has the needs of the public in their protection. Mission statement is going to assure more continuing education in areas that will promote the excellence in the profession of naturopathic medicine and define sanctions and disciplines from which have been learned over history. It will also offer education to the public on what naturopathic medicine is and the value in their health care. It's hoping to expedite licensure for those already practicing and after practicing in other licensing jurisdictions, and to grow continuing education opportunities to address issues which are often brought to the attention of the board during investigations. Yep. The board is also hoping to, in the near future, start to look at what is at establishing standards for what is known as direct, non-direct health care processes, such as online consulting, to assure that the Oregonians receiving health care from practitioners practicing in that manner is at the highest quality of care. There is currently over 650 licensees. In December of 1998, there was less than 250. So the profession is growing at a pretty steady rate. I expect that to continue to increase at 50 to 70 licensed practitioners in Oregon every year. I don't anticipate that decreasing at all, since there are currently six schools accredited to teach naturopathic medicine, with two who are in candidate status right now. There are currently 12 states that license naturopathic require licensure for naturopathic physicians, and 4 provinces in Canada, which we share reciprocity licensure with to a degree. There is also Idaho has just, I believe they are at this session passing their legislation to license naturopathic physicians. Regarding Senate Bill 786, we've requested the ethnic and race information from licensees on their renewals over the last 2 renewal cycles. And I have a handout. I think I left back there. Sorry. I'll get that to you. It's been very interesting to see how many variances of the language they're spoken by our naturopaths as their second language. With that information, I'm hoping the next step will be to find out in those offices that do not have a bilingual practitioner if they have staff or if they've considered encouraging staff that is bilingual so that they can still offer the care in different areas of the state and the city even when they themselves are not bilingual. We will be losing one of our board members shortly, and I've again contacted the Office of Multicultural Health in hopes of getting their list to get that request for interest out to those people. I did that a couple of years ago. Didn't get much results, but I think if you just keep at it, sometimes that makes a difference in having things happen. We have the complaints. You know, I don't know if I put it in the notebook. I don't think I did. But the complaints were continuing to increase as the number of licensees increased. That's pretty natural. In 2002, the board started to become more proactive in communicating with licensees about the concerns that had been presented to them in investigations, where I think prior to that, often investigation was kept kind of low-key and not much information was shared. And I think that in 2003, we had like 30 complaints brought to the attention of the board, and that number is slowly decreasing. Even though the number of licensees is increasing, I think a big part of that is because communication has been opened by both our website, and we have a newsletter that we put out on a regular basis, and in those we share areas of concerns that come to the board regarding charting or communication has always been a very big issue for the beginning of a complaint. We are addressing those issues on a regular basis by rule and by just communicating with licensees in our newsletters and on the website. The board currently has 7 performance measures. The first one is a customer service satisfaction. We sent a survey to, satisfaction survey to all who contact the office if there's a means by which to get that to them. Sometimes a person will have a conversation with them, but we don't have any contact information to send or fax them the survey. I'm considering posting that one on our website just to see how people feel about the service they're getting from our website. There's also, in 2003, we sent a survey that was specifically addressed to just the licensees to see where the board stood as far as our communication, where our strengths and weaknesses were. And all of them came back with positive comments, but there seemed to be some confusion over what the role of the board was and what the role of the professional association is. So we've addressed those kind of issues as well in our website and our correspondence to licensees so they have a better understanding of what we do and what our intent here is. The second one is the response time to inquiries. As time goes on, staff becomes more knowledgeable. We are able to answer most inquiries within a day. If they're phone conversations, they can often happen at that same time. Sometimes it takes a day or two. If I don't have an answer, I'll need to ask one of our board members an answer, and I get back right back to the person. If it's something that there's always an inquiry that's going to require board discussion, when that kind of an issue comes up, currently what we do is I notify the inquirer when the next board meeting is and when they can expect a response, and then the board discusses it rather than trying to respond to something in a timely manner and have it be incorrect information. Our preference is to hold out and make sure that they get what they need. The third performance measure is revolves around the issuance of an initial license. We've made great strides in that area. We have a national exam service that we have to get scores from. And so, say, it used to take them 8 to 12 weeks to get us those exam scores, which absolutely delays the initial licensure. They are now able to do it in 6 to 8 weeks and are hoping to, in the next couple of years, reduce that to 6 weeks. From the time that we have a completed application file to the time that the license is actually issued is usually just a day or two, because that file is complete before we allow them to apply for that initial license. The issuance of renewals has been a time that has taken longer and longer as the number of licensees increase. But in 2003, we rewrote the rule so that we didn't have to verify every single piece of continuing education that came into the board with every renewal every year. What we do now is a random audit. We had to work through some issues with it in the first year, but in 2004, we got it pretty well down pat, and we were able to get those renewals issued within usually less than 3 weeks. That's quite a bit lower than we anticipated it working out to be. The complaint completion time is our fifth performance measure, and I understand the intent of setting a timeline to get a complaint complete, but I think bottom line it's the concern has to be that the complaint has been thoroughly investigated and it has been done properly, more so than encouraging a quick response time. We generally, complaints are handled within 2 to 3 months completely, but there's been an occasional complaint that was, one was 12 months, and we just completed one that took over 18 months to finish with all the investigations and additional information that was required as part of that. But it was completed satisfactorily as opposed to just being pushed through to get done. And I think that's a really important issue, part of that to remember.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Mark.
Thank you. With regard to complaints, so you noted you had about 30 in 03.
Uh-huh.
What sort of runs the spectrum of your complaints?
Chair Devlin, Representative Marsh. The majority of our complaints are actually communication problems. Those can usually be resolved with mediation, with opening that communication. The naturopaths have prescription rights, and there are complaints that are revolve around that. A naturopath doesn't check his list before he prescribes something, so that's issued or that's resolved by education. If there's harm been caused, then that's a much longer process. Billing issues, which we don't really handle, but we will speak with the complainant and encourage them to go to insurance companies or whoever. And that's it generally.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Our sixth performance measure relates to public awareness. And with the website offering more information, the public has become more aware of what their rights are and what options are out there for their health care. We track how many requests we get for verification because that really tells us how many people care about licensure and know that it's out there and what the value of it is. And our seventh performance measure is continuing education, which licensees are required to do continuing education every year. What we have started tracking is the number of hours over that required and those specific areas that are required in that education, how much more is they're doing in a year. That will kind of give us an idea of who's looking at additional aspects of the education or wanting to provide more excellence, I guess, in their actual practice themselves. We also learn from those areas of education what kind of education the doctors are getting so that we can make sure that they're all getting the wide spectrum of education. I'd just like to reiterate that the priority of the board, which is a single program agency, is the public protection in practice of naturopathic medicine. We strive hard to do that. We're small, but we work really hard at it. As the phase, I guess this is basically like going into phase two. to, should I ask if there's any questions at this time? Or
are there any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would like to, you did reference earlier that you have your Senate Bill 786 material.
I do, and it's sitting back, which I think will get
If you could just pass that up to staff so that we could get a copy for the committee. And thank you very much for your report. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
While she's doing that, would you please identify yourself, and do you have any? I assume that you are probably a board member or the board chair.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dr. K.E. Edmiston. I'm a naturopathic physician, and I am on the board of naturopathic examiners.
Okay. Go ahead, please proceed. I was just trying to see if you had any statement that you wanted to make. Or
no, thank you.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you, Karen. Phase two is basically our budget drivers are the continuing growth in the profession over the last 7 years, and I expect that to continue forever, I guess. That growth is expected to be 57 licensees every year here forward, with the increased number of schools that are accredited, number of graduates who are actually going into the practice. The current staff is 1.75. There's myself, and then I have a 0.75 office specialist too in my office. We continue to strive to give excellent customer service to licensees and consumers. In 1999, the staff was increased from 0.25 to 0.75, and at that time the fees were $700 for a two-year renewal, biennial renewal. Those were reduced temporarily by 50%, and in 2003 I did have to increase those to $550, but I don't expect to ever have to go, I'm knocking on wood, up to 700, because as our license base increases, our fees should be able to drop. We should be able to satisfy our administrative needs with that. Until 2000, the board administered all the national exams, which are the basic science and clinical exams that are required for licensure as a doctor. And then those were taken over by a national exam service, but we still continue to administer the state formulary and jurisprudence exam, which is required as part of licensure. We do that twice a year. We do that in January and August. We do that in conjunction with the national exams at this time, although we're looking to expand the number of times that we offer the exam in a year so that people who are coming in from other states who already have a license can take that exam without having to wait. The problem with doing it right away is that we do not have a question base large enough to offer that exam and assure credibility for all those questions. In 2000, we also got our website up and running. That was pretty fun. And we continue to improve on that, to offer question links for consumers and for the naturopaths, and we continue to build on that. We offer licensing information, and we offer links to other state agencies and naturopathic organizations throughout the state and even nationally. In 2003, we published our first newsletter, and I have handed one out, our latest copy. It's not our 2003. But it has been hard to get those out in a timely manner. Just things come up that require attention before a newsletter. And so hopefully at some point we'll be able to get back on track and do those on a regular quarterly basis as we originally anticipated. We have two legislative concepts, House Bill 2058, which you already know about, and Senate Bill 58, which, if passed, will give the board clear statutory authority over unlicensed persons. Currently, we do not have any statutory authority to prosecute people who come to Oregon and claim to be naturopathic physicians and practice. We have to send that to the Department of Justice, and you know where where that goes in the stack of priorities. And so the board is hoping to, with this authority, to prevent that that practice from continuing. We have three policy packages. One is to cover the move to shared client services. The second one is to cover the cost of the requested staff increase from 0.75 to full-time. And the third is to cover cost of space for that staff person, since that three-quarter time person currently shares their space with a quarter time person with another agency. I think that I'm finished. If you have any questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. And now, Mr. Gores.
Sure. Thank you once again. Jim Gores, DAS Budget and Management. Once again, same type of presentation. I'll run through it very quickly. Of all the health-related licensing boards, the naturopathic examiner's budget encompasses about 5.3% of the health-related licensing boards. Once again, this board fell into the health and basic needs print of the governor's principal budget. They are entirely other funds. Their full budget for the governor's recommended budget is $389,864, and all revenues come from license fees. On page 6, services and supplies are 38% of their budget. Personal services are 62% of their budget.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do these boards participate in the Smart Buy program, and does that, do you show a documented savings on that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, due to the small nature of these boards, I believe I can check for more detail on that, but I do believe it was just assumed that because they are so small that there would not be any real realizable, if that's not a great term, but savings.
Significant.
Thank you.
So they do not participate in.
No. Once again, on page 7, just the history of the board's budget and the history of their positions in FTE. On page 8, their major policy issues, there's an increasing interest in naturopathic medicine, and as you see an increase in interest in naturopathic medicine, it also increases the investigation caseload that these folks see. And then also, as Ann talked about, the board is requesting authority to impose civil penalties. And then finally, the three policy packages with which Ann mentioned, which I won't go into.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. I'd like to go back to Representative Wisnott's question about the Smart Buy program.
Yes.
Now, was a judgment made about not participating based on an assumption, which is the word I heard you use, or was there some careful look at what the savings might be or would not be? Surely there must have been some other approach other than assumptions.
Give me one second.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. This is Senator Gordley. Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, at this time, I don't have that information immediately available. I can ask on that. I remember having a conversation with folks on this, but I don't remember the specifics, but I can get that for you.
And as it relates to all of the licensing,
sure,
agencies, would be very helpful.
I will.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, thank you for offering before. I don't want to get into DAS's business, but my fast tour of the building down there, the nursing board is scanning and putting all their records electronically. And to me, because you talked about space increase, as you grow, you need more space for these records. There could be some sort of shared use of a service that puts all these licenses in their paperwork electronically and stored it. You wouldn't need that much storage. So again, I don't want to go there, but if DAS might want to look at that and consider shared functions or services for all these agencies. It could save us, you know, save them, the licensees, and everyone as far as storage, like, you know, processing and things, especially in that one building.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wisnett, that is a good suggestion. And just a quick comment is these smaller boards in the Board of Nursing, since they're all on the same floor, they do share a lot of different functions, and that is one that they certainly could look at.
Further questions or comments? Thank you all, and thank you for your service. We really appreciate the efforts that went into your presentations. And next, we will call up the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. Felicia Holgate, Director.
Good morning. For the record, Felicia Holgate, and I am the Director of the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. And with me this morning is Genevieve Duran, an occupational therapist from Portland and our current chair of our board. The mission of the board, as you see up here, and we have it at each of our board meetings, and is taken very seriously by our board, is protection of the public by supervising occupational therapy practice and to ensure the safe and ethical delivery of occupational therapy services. Because occupational therapy services are often given and provided to a very vulnerable population, it is something that we look at very carefully. And these are areas in hospitals, home health, or schools. The goals of the board this year have been to increase our efficiency and our effectiveness, especially through technology, and I'll talk about our website a little bit later, and to work and have partnerships with other licensing and regulatory agencies. And one of the things I've been able to do, or have really worked hard to do since I became director in late 2003, is to look at best practices on a real level, look at each of our functions and think, how can we do that better? The board was created in 1977. There's five members of the board who serve for 4 years. Most of our board members serve the two terms. They can only serve two terms. We have three professional occupational therapists, that is two that are occupational therapists and one that is an occupational therapy assistant, and we have two public members. 1.25 FTE, that is my position as executive director, and an office specialist that I share with another health licensing board. In 1978, when the board was started, there were 280 licensees, and now, actually, since the chart in your budget binder, under agency summary, you'll see the first page, we've had a steady growth, and we now have 1,350. So we've grown 50 since I've even made that chart. So what does the board do? Primarily, we issue licenses to applicants who meet the qualifications, and sometimes that's done very easily. Other times we have to look into the background quite closely. We require and monitor continuing education, and we investigate complaints, and we take appropriate disciplinary action. Those are really the three functions of our board. The board met last year for an extra board meeting and developed a strategic plan, a four-year plan, and we've been busy working on that. The first is to utilize and promote the website to make all the information public. And it really has been very exciting. Anybody can verify an occupational therapist license online. Anybody can download the applications online, obtain all the information that they want, really is getting on the line, online. And I can say that about 95% or almost 100% of new licensees have already gotten the application form online. So people really are using it. The really exciting thing we're doing now is we reviewed the past 5 years of board minutes and newsletters, and I've reviewed the year and a half I've been here as to what kind of questions come into the board, what do people ask us, primary licensees, and we're now coming up with issues, questions, and topics, and we're going to put all of that kind of question that comes up online, too. There's definitely been a decrease in people calling for information that is online. I don't get questions anymore on license verifications, and if I do, I actually ask if they have a computer there and go through with them. Could you get on this website, look in this section, look on licensee, here's the name you're looking for, and then I don't need to do it anymore. So that's really been very effective. We require and monitor continuing education. The board, a few years ago, looked at every licensee during renewal, every licensee CE, but what they need to do by rule is we audit 5%, and otherwise we ask them, and they have to state and sign how much continuing ed they have done. What we do is we do not license the renewal until the board members have approved the audited continuing ed. So we do have 100% compliance because we don't license them unless and until they have completed it. We're also looking again at partnering with other licensing board and regulations. For example, when we have an application come in, we ask them all the criminal background information. We get verifications from other states where they've been licensed, as well as our national certification board. The board also looked at all of our current statutes and our rules, and we're looking at a list of objectives, what the board wants to accomplish. Our primary two things the board's been looking at is the reentry. What do we do with applicants who have been out of practice for 10 years? And we're getting quite a few of those want to come back into practice, and we're really being firm on what we expect. It's not just an easy come back in. We expect a lot of education, and in the past we had a mentoring program which we're trying to tighten up, and we've worked with our one university, Pacific University. There's only one OT school, occupational therapy school, and they have worked out an education program, a reentry program, where they combine education as well as, because they're a student, they can do as a student, go in and do some work in the field of occupational therapy they want to go into. We also, in the past, the board has looked and investigated at all the complaints that have come in. I'll talk about complaints in a minute, but basically we've moved away from the board doing it into a professional investigator. What are the major changes? The board started in 1977, hired a director. CE, continuing ed, was adopted in 1995. There's been no change in FTEs. 1997, the office specialist was hired. We contract for IT services, computer services. A hearings officer panel was adopted in 1999. And in 2003, we went into two-year licensing. That is something that was adopted by the legislature in the last session that went very smoothly in 2004. So we're currently in our first two-year license. A great streamlining, a great savings for everybody. We do allow people to get a one-year license out of 1,300. We only had 17 ask for that. So in 2004, that was really a great, a wonderful savings, both in time and money for us. We have three performance goals that work in exactly with what our job is to do. We issue the licenses. I did check all of the 2004 licenses and 2003, and they were all issued actually within 3 days, and that is my goal. Additional time is needed if there's a complaint, arrest, crime, whatever. So we investigate those, and that obviously takes more time. Our second goal, CE, continuing ed, as I say, our goal is 100% compliance, because we will not issue that renewal license unless and until they have completed their continuing ed. And now with two-year licensing, they have a little more flexibility because they have 30 points now instead of 15 per year. They have 30 for the 2 years. So that gives the licensees an additional flexibility, and we hope they don't procrastinate on that. But we keep reminding them. We do audit 5%, and as well as board members or anybody with any kind of problem in the past, we will add them to it. But there is an extension or a waiver for hardship, although that's less than maybe 5 total. It's very hard. The board looks at it carefully to give that kind of waiver because they expect every licensee to get their continuing ed completed. Third goal, investigate complaints and take action. We say within a year, and we have been able to accomplish that. We do want to ensure competent services. The board meets quarterly. There has been, for our board, relatively an unprecedented number of complaints. And on page 3 of my summary, I show that in year 2000, there were no complaints. 2001, there were 6. 2002, there were 2. 2003, 1. Last year, there were 8. And we're finalizing the last complaint at the board meeting next week. And this year, we've just Friday received our 4th complaint. So relative to the occupational therapist, that's a huge load. But all of the complaints that we've worked at, we've been able to resolve by consent order. So we have not had to go to hearing or have any legal action. So that's been something the board's been able to do to have a very big savings both in time, money, and attorney general costs. The fourth goal, we have a placeholder, and we have, in fact, developed and started a consumer satisfaction survey. So far, I've been able to do it to everybody that we sent a written verification to in 2004, as well as everybody we licensed in 2004. And we really get a lot of compliments. 80% of them gave us an excellent rating, and 19% in the very good, and only 1% was below average. And I think that's because we give a lot of personal service. When I'm gone, I don't like to be gone because I'm the one that licenses. So I've been able to hire the former director, for example, when I am gone because we're so small, and she'll come in for a couple of hours every other day to keep things up. So that's been a nice way to keep that service up. What have we done to control costs and improve programs? We share staff computer fax, as you've heard, with all the other licensing boards, as well as information. One of the nice things as coming in with a new director, as I said, looking at how to improve. I've also attended other board meetings and talked to all those. We talk to each other all the time. How do you do things? How can I do things better? I've developed an email list, not only of licensees, but of our interested parties. So, for example, I had 40 people or 50 people on my interested parties. A majority of those get it by email, the notice now. So it's a huge, small relative savings, but it'll add up. I right now have only a quarter of my licensees on my email only. I'm trying to get that up to 50%. When I started working, I thought, oh, it'll be 80% easy the first year. Well, it's not quite that easy, but one by one, all the new licensees, for example, I tell them I'm putting you on an email list because I've already been talking to them by email. And that's going to be a huge savings. Our newsletter, our rules, all our information, not our renewals, because that has to go by letter, I think, to make sure. And we will go to online licensing and online renewals, I think, in the next few years. I was hoping it would be next year when we do our renewals in 2006, but I don't think we have to share all that together and do it as a group. Our website, as I mentioned, has been really used a lot, and more as I talk to licensees, I say, do you have a website? I'll send you that right now. And I can send it and they can get it immediately. So it really has been. Some don't have it, and then we fax it or send it, whatever. But it's really working out very well. And let me go on to board members. We have, as I mentioned, our five board members. We do get recommendations for the board members. Right now we have some geographical diversity with a member in Salem and the Dalles. Our new board member will be appointed in October, and we're working on that. We do have a paraplegic on our board member and a Hawaiian Islander, so we do have diversity. As far as Senate Bill 786 compliance for diversity, the form that was developed by all the other licensing board was attached to the application form. What I've done is I've made it part of the application form, so we actually get it from pretty much everybody fills that out now. And we do have over 30 languages and quite a few minorities on our as occupational therapists. There's only one occupational therapy school at Pacific. It's a three-year graduate program. The occupational therapy assistant program used to be at Mount Hood, was stopped. If you looked at that chart of our licensee, there was a dip in 2000-2001. That probably was because of changes to Medicare and Medicaid. And at that time, the occupational therapy school, assistant school at Mount Hood, just didn't have enough students. But we are working and, or at least keeping in touch. There's supposed to be a new school opening up in Vancouver, which would be the closest. We, as a budget note, all our money is from other funds, from the licensee fees. We are adopting administratively our fees for this year. They were adopted at the last legislature. They were approved, and it was changed the initial fee from 75 to 85, the renewals from 85 to 100, no change in OT assistant, except for out of state, we increased that by $20. The board has been doing very well financially. There's two reasons for that. It's clear I've done an analysis from 0103 and for now for a 6-month year, and every month where there's a high charge, it's because of AG cost or investigative cost. So it's clear that that is the key for we need to make sure we have enough money. As I said, we've been lucky that all our cases have gone to consent order, but if that doesn't occur, there's going to be a high, always a high charge for that. Biennial licensing, as I mentioned, has been a wonderful streamlining and cost savings. So with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Yeah, Senator Nelson.
On this sheet, there's a current monthly salary. It doesn't add up to the budget monthly salary. They're different. What happens to that money? It's about $8,000.
Well, there's two salaries on there.
I mean, you have a current monthly salary, and you have a budgeted monthly mm-hmm. salary. The other one, most of them are equal or the same. Sometimes there's a difference. What happens to that extra money?
This biennium, and this is what we're budgeted. An average salary, it allows for step increases because this person is eligible. One of the same.
So that would be an increase.
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Chair Devlin, members of the committee, there also was a big savings because when I started in October 2003, the former director who had worked for the state for 20 years was at the highest salary level, and I came in at a lower level, so there's that savings also. And also, when I came on, we didn't spend any money for a year. I was learning the job. I was very conservative. We really were very careful in our spending.
Representative March.
Yeah, I would say so, since you've got about a 19-month budget ending balance. Has the board considered maybe rolling back those fees?
Yes, Senator Devlin, or Chair Devlin, Representative March, yes, we have. We've talked about it. And I've talked to our budget analyst. Because I was brand new at the job and setting up this budget and concerned about cost of investigations in AG, because we didn't have to go beyond a consent consent order, I was very concerned about what would happen with the increase in fees. If we just have one or two cases, that can easily be $10,000-$20,000 cost. So with that in mind, I wanted to make sure that I understood the budget very well, because it was developed just after 6 months after I started working. We have talked as a board, since our renewals will be in May of 2006 with our first two-year licensing, then I wanted to wait till another 6 months or so for the board then to decide that we won't need that increase, because the majority of our money is during the renewal period, which will start in March, April, May of 2006.
Represent March.
Maybe a follow up on that for Mr. Gores. Since some of these boards, and this one or others, might incur extraordinary investigative expenses, if there were not enough funds in their account, does the state step in and act as sort of the bank until they're able to reconcile that?
Mr. Chair and Representative March, luckily that has not happened. Is my understanding, if they don't have enough money, they have to close their doors. That's an extreme measure, though, and I couldn't speak for sure as to how the state would handle that. I would hope, for public safety's sake, that wouldn't happen. Part of my job is to make sure that doesn't happen, and so that's, if I do my job, hopefully that won't. But at the same time, if any one of these boards gets one or two big disciplinary cases, the legal fees can just eat up their budget in a heartbeat.
Follow up.
Chair Devlin, Representative Marsh, what happened actually when that fee increase came in, there were a couple, it just takes one or two big cases in that 2001-2002 period as well. And so the fee increase was partly because of that. With the reduction in both the savings, because we have not had any big cases, and because of the salary savings, I think we have developed a quite a lot of savings. But I'd rather be in that position than the other.
Representative March.
And this actually brings up something that we should consider, I think, as a legislative body. And are we getting the bill that deals with the shifting of the accounting to DAS in this subcommittee, for example? We might want to provide for a contingency measure if one of these boards or agencies gets into the position of having to do that, although in this particular agency they had 18 months in 0103, they had 25 months in 0305 when they got their increase, and so this agency is probably pretty secure, but then it raises the question of ending balances and what we do in a contingency situation, and we should have a proviso for that.
I'll ask Ms. Manthe to look into it. I guess one of the questions there would be is, we've all seen circumstances where regulatory entities that are general fund-based or largely general fund-based have had to come to the emergency board on occasion for additional funds when they've gotten into extensive litigation. Obviously, any of our licensing boards that are not general fund-based could be in the same situation. I guess my expectation would be, under practice, is that the e-board might actually advance the money in that case, but they would require the board to probably pay it back.
And that that fact argues for the interest to go to the general funds if we're as a contingency factor.
Thank you for making my argument, Mr. Chair.
That's Representative Marsh, that's a circulatory argument, and I got caught up in that, but I won't get caught again. But
and Mr. Chair, Felicia Holgate, if I might just add, the board, the Occupational Therapy Board, did in fact go to the emergency board when it had the problem in 03
okay.
and had the cases.
Okay. Any additional questions? And Ms. Manthey will look into that issue.
Mr. Chair, this
yes, Senator Nelson.
I think I know the answer to this, but I was looking at back again at this green page with everything. It doesn't reflect the fact that the employee has to pay their own federal income tax, their state income tax, and their match of Social Security, the employee match. Would that be right? I mean, yeah, they're not really state expenses, they're employees' expenses, but the employee still is paying those
right
items.
Go ahead, Ms. Manson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a reminder that the sheet that's attached to my analysis was in response to Senator Wisnett's question, and that details out the budget amount for personal services, and so it ties to what you'd see in their budget.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you.
Anything additional?
No. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Gores, sounds like an old Herman Hermit's song. Some of my members here know. Third verse.
Mr. Chair, I'll provide the final verse if you'd like. Just real quickly, once again, Consumer Business Services program area. Once again, health-related licensing boards, 0.9% of that. The occupational therapists comprise 3.7% of that total budget. Once again, they fell under the governor's health and basic needs principle. This agency is all other funds with a total governor's recommended budget of $274,504, and all their fees come or all their revenue comes from licensing fees. Once again, very much in line with all the other budgets you've seen today, 41% of their budget is services and supplies, 59% is personal services. Page 7, just the history again of their budget, it's been fairly predictable. Major policy issues, a couple that Felicia has talked about, changes in service delivery. A lot of it has gone from nursing institutions to private practice, so there's been a shift of sorts. Educational opportunities in Oregon are somewhat limited for this profession. There's also a rural therapist shortage, and the fluctuating licensee base was noted back in November. It appears to be back on the increase again. And then the board has four policy packages, one once again for the House Bill 2058 to move them to shared client services. Another piece is for hiring an investigator for their board. They would like to attend a national occupational therapy meeting. And then finally, the ratification of fee increase approved during the 2003 legislative session. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Any questions, Principal? I guess not. Well, thank you very much. Yes, Representative Jensen.
On E7, in the you see that state government service charge has gone 0305 from 4,300 to 18,079.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, if I get this wrong, I get the impression that Deborah Manthey may have the answer for that. But I believe what that is a good portion of that is the cost of them moving to shared client services.
Can we afford to ask, Mr. Chair?
It's an often asked question in this building.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
On a serious note, I'm wondering if anybody's ever thought about looking at privatizing, contracting that out.
They probably have, Representative Jensen, and they probably will again in the future, but right now when we were prioritizing, I think what we basically did is... Well, to some extent, we always prioritize debt service as one, and we basically disregarded debt service charges as an inevitable. But DAS itself is obviously under the scrutiny of the Ways and Means Committee, and Representative Johnson has been spending a lot of time on the Department of Administrative Services, so it's only half a response. I realize that, Representative Jensen, but...
May I look forward sometime?
Following up on that, I assume that this is related to that shift of what they were getting it free from DHS in essence, or at a much reduced rate, and DAS is charging the full ticket.
If I may, yes. Mr. Chair, Representative March, actually, what that is I think it's under other services and supply. It varies with the budgets, which is going to be confusing. I will not argue with that. It's basically DHS, Department of Human Services, charged slightly less than Shared Client Services will. I can't remember the exact numbers. Maybe not slightly less. That might not be the proper term. But there is some difference there, but they did charge for it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Ms. Manthey will provide us some more detail.
I'll be happy to.
Thank you very much. With that, I will close the hearing on HB 5036 and HB 5037. Committee, tomorrow morning we're going to have a very full day. In the morning we will have a public hearing on the Oregon Health Sciences University, and in the evening we will have a hearing on all education issues. So we're going to hear from a lot of members of the public tomorrow. Next week, on Monday, we'll do the Board of Examiners, the Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology, the Board of Radiologic Technology, and the Veterinary Medical Examining Board. And with that, I will adjourn until tomorrow. Representative Wisnett.
Well, we have, is DAS going to provide cars to go up to Lake Oswego, or we're on our own?
We can check. I'll have Ms. Manthey, can you relay the question
sure.
to Mr. Bender and get back to all the committee members on travel arrangements?
How are you? Are we at Lake Ridge?
We're at Lake Ridge, yeah.
I'll do that.
I think you only scheduled it for an hour, too, didn't you? Or was that a mistake?
Six hours. No, I think it's scheduled for
two.
We won't go any longer than 2.5 at the longest. With that, we're adjourned until tomorrow morning.
I heard that story before.